Ralph Sherman
and Maya Schoen. Today we have a very special program for you. It's our first in the series of the WBAI Fund Drive. And we'll be with you today with our engineer, Sean Rhodes. Let's look at the premium we are giving as our gift to you for your donation to WBAI. Barack Obama, False Hope, and Short Change. Many of you contributed to WBAI for Barack Obama, False Hope, and Short Change. We hope that now you will contribute again and give this as a gift to your friends, your family, and your colleagues. It's important to understand today who Barack Obama is and what he is going to do, as he has shown in his first 100 days during his administration. Barack Obama, False Hope, and Short Change, $60 donation, contribution to your listener-sponsored radio station, WBAI. The number to call is 212-209-2900. We're going to play a sharp excerpt from this series. There are 13 programs in this CD. This is a CD of the MP3 format, and that way we could pack in 13 complete shows. The one we're going to play is Barack Obama at the Service of Corporate and Finance Capital. That's a subject we discuss week after week. Let's look at what happened recently when the World Bank President Robert Zoellick, at a meeting that took place in Washington of the International Fund, stated that the deepening global economic crisis threatens to unleash, quote, a human and developmental calamity. He warned that some 90 million more people will be trapped in extreme poverty. He added, quote, that the number of chronically hungry people is expected to climb to over 1 billion just this year. Meanwhile, as Robert Zoellick, the World Bank president, is giving this intense warning of what is taking place, we read in the New York Times last Sunday that the compensation at six of the largest U.S. banks is on track to return to record levels that preceded last year's financial crisis. Where is Barack Obama when this is taking place? He supported the executive compensation. As the New York Times writes, quote, the money set aside for compensation suggests that workers at many banks will see their pay, much of it in bonuses, recover from the lows of last year. Billions of dollars in cash infusions under the Troubled Asset Relief Program, TARP. Billions of dollars to buy back the so-called toxic home loans and other bad debts. Billions and billions of dollars for these ruling class magnates.
Maya, it's trillions, actually, in low-cost government loans, guaranteed under bond insurances and the toxic home loans and other bad debts, totally subsidized by us, by taxpayers, because of what the Obama regime has done. Goldman Sachs has set aside the biggest compensation windfall, $4.7 billion for the quarter. By the way, the workers, so-called, that are receiving this are the highest-paid traders and executives. That's where all these payouts are going. Goldman Sachs had the biggest compensation windfall. If that level continues, according to the New York Times, it'll add up to an average pay of $569,220 in bonuses per executive, more than they paid in 2007, the record year. J.P. Morgan Chase's investment unit is on track to award its executives a bonus award of $509,524 over the year, more than $150,000 higher than in the peak year of 2006.
And, Ralph, that's the average, so that means you have your mid-level executives, plus you have your multi-millions to your high-level
executives. Now, these are profits. These are just handouts to the very banker gangsters who engineered the derivative scam and caused the toxic crisis in the first place. The banks are justifying these huge amounts on the grounds that they have now reported substantial profits for the first quarter of this year. Where did those profits come from? Those are the result of the taxpayer subsidies granted by the government with thrown-in deceptive accounting gimmicks. So, but the banks are concealing that the bulk of the bad debts that they are holding, which are estimated at over $2 trillion, are being underwritten by the government, by the Obama government, which means us, who are going to take them off their hands at vastly inflated prices. These are bankrupt bad debts that the government is paying top dollar for, vastly inflated prices, and this goes into the pockets of the same bankers who caused the crisis in the first place. One of the six banks, Morgan Stanley, reported a first quarter loss of $570 million and then proceeded to set aside $2.8 billion for compensation to its executives, which is 68% of its total revenue. You got the picture? The Obama administration refuses to place any requirements on how banks spend this bailout money. They're not obligated to report how it's being used. The bankers are free to do what they want with government handouts. They are not using it to increase lending to any businesses or consumers, which is the supposed or nominal ostensible purpose of the bailout. No, they're hoarding the funds. They shore up their balance sheets. They award themselves billions in pay and bonuses. They ramp up on home foreclosures. They sharply increase interest and fees on credit cards. They buy up everything they can lay their hands on at bargain basement prices. And they continue the process of not only the enrichment of the tiny handful of banker gangsters, but the escalation of the process of fictive capital and speculation, which has engendered this systemic crisis in the first place. This regime is not just a handmaiden of the gangster banksters, it is hired hand servant.
And Ralph, on that note, we're going to go to the excerpt, Barack Obama at the Service of Corporate and Finance Capital. But first, let me remind you, call 212-209-2900, and volunteers in the pledge room are ready to take your call. Your donation of $60 for this jam-packed CD of MP3s, 13 programs in the series Barack Obama, False Hope and Sure Change. Let's strip the illusions. Let's empower ourselves with the information so we can have effective social change. Barack Obama, False Hope and Sure Change. Take it away, Sean.
Program today, Barack Obama at the Service of Corporate and Finance Capital. Ralph?
Well, Maya, this very important article gives an inside view, just as we had prior documented how Bill Clinton was selected by the insiders of corporate and capitalist America and vetted. This process was replicated with Barack Obama. Quote, he was still unknown in Washington circles. That changed the following month when Vernon Jordan, the power broker and corporate board member who chaired Clinton's presidential transition team in 1992, placed calls to 20 of his closest corporate friends to meet at his home with Barack Obama. And then they brought Gregory Craig, the attorney with Williams and Connolly, who was a key figure in the selection of Clinton himself, and the process began. Word about Obama was then spread through the Washington's, quote, blue-chip law firms, lobby shops, and corporate offices. Mike Williams, the vice president for legislative affairs of the Bond Market Association, became the main figure then for Obama. Quote, we represent Wall Street firms, Williams stated. There is a perception out there that the Democrats are anti-business, and I talked to him about that directly. He was forthright, which I appreciated. So what you're dealing here with is the vetting of Barack Obama by the Wall Street firms themselves, the Bond Market Association point person. He set up then, Williams did, a conference call between Obama and financial industry lobbyists, quote, that went very well. And in June 2004, Williams helped organize a little fundraiser for Obama at the Bond Market Association. It wasn't just the financial community, it was a broad cross-section of Wall Street. 200 turned out. Overwhelming support. Then Tom Quinn, the senior partner at Venable, one of the top lobbyists in town, was called by Williams and came to the fundraiser. "I'm on the list. Everyone in political fundraising circles knows me," said Quinn, the power broker since the late 1960s for Wall Street. He contributed funds to Obama at the Bond Market Association event and began to make calls to all the people he worked with to get them to contribute and donate money as well. Robert Hamala, the big player in Democratic circles and a key figure for Wall Street, also was involved because he brought in Larry Duncan, the lobbyist for Lockheed Martin, the Venable client, who organized the affair. Quote, "Hamala liked what he saw and continued to be impressed by Obama." So it is clear that the financial backers and the Wall Street backers and the Lockheed Martin Pentagon backers selected this man. Illinois-based Exelon Corporation, the nation's leading nuclear power plant operator, Obama's fourth largest patron. They have given more to Obama than to Clinton and McCain combined, brothers and sisters. So you are talking here about a purchase. He was auditioning, he was selected, he was vetted, he was organized, he is funded, and he is run.
Well, they got more than their money's worth for their contribution. During a debate on the 2005 energy bill, Obama helped to vote down an amendment that would have killed vast loan guarantees for power plant operators to develop new energy projects. The loan guarantees were called, quote, "one of the worst provisions in the massive piece of legislation," end quote, by taxpayers for common sense and citizens against government waste. The public will not only pay millions of dollars in loan costs, but will risk losing billions of dollars if the companies default. They get what they pay for.
They buy
the candidates. And Ralph, before we move on to another subject, I want to return to his selection of his aides and his economic policy director. His new economic policy director is Jason Furman. As I mentioned, a close associate of the former Clinton administration Treasury Secretary and the current Citigroup executive Robert Rubin. Furman was a director of the Hamilton Project, a think tank that was set up by Rubin together with other wealthy Democratic bankers, corporate executives, and heads of major Wall Street hedge funds. Among the other members of the Hamilton Project's advisory council is Obama's recently departed vetter for the vice presidential candidates, James Johnson. The stated aims of the Hamilton Project include confronting fiscal imbalances, promoting entitlement reform. These are euphemisms for balancing the budget on the backs of working people. And this also means slashing social programs like Social Security and Medicare. Furman, as most of Obama's aides, is a firm proponent of, quote, free trade. So this is a clear signal, another signal to Wall Street, just as Bill Clinton's choice of Rubin as his chief economic advisor 15 years ago.
Well, Maya, that is what they call packaging the sellout, because the basic scenario here is that, by the way, it plays into the following. James A. Johnson was the chief advisor who was directing the search for Obama's running mate, and he was called out as a lobbyist, and so for cosmetic purposes, Obama removed him from that position. He was designated to be chief of staff for a Kerry White House and also Treasury Secretary. So you're talking about a key figure, and by the way, he had involved millions of dollars in insider loans and bonuses and approved hundreds and even billions of dollars of compensation for corporate executives. So Johnson was vetting Obama. "I have to hire the vetter to vet the vetters," said Obama. But it was Johnson as the...
He wasn't vetting Obama. He was vetting for Obama.
That's right. But that's true, Maya. But here's the point that is made very well by the World Socialist website. It was, in fact, Johnson who vetted Obama himself and determined that he would make a suitable candidate to defend the social interests of those very Wall Street figures for whom Johnson was the placeman.
And we want to thank Bill Van Auken of the World Socialist website, his article June 13th, Obama Campaign Aid Controversies Underscore Big Business Control of the Democratic Party. Let's go back to Jason Furman. This is incredible when you read about Jason Furman, the economic policy advisor for Barack Obama. Van Auken writes, Furman stirred up controversy within Democratic Party circles by publishing a defense of Walmart and suggesting that privatized Social Security accounts, a big plan of George Bush, and benefit cuts along the lines proposed by the Bush administration should be considered. He is written in favor of corporate tax cuts, bipartisan deficit cutting, and presidential vetoes of any measure exceeding the federal budget. Ralph?
Well, he is director of the Hamilton Project, which is the think tank that was set up by Rubin, as you were indicating, Maya. But what is the signal that Furman's role sends to Wall Street? Let's go through it. It means that the Rubin legacy of unprecedented rise in the stock market, enriching a thin layer at the top of American society, while creating the conditions of downsizing government, imposing NAFTA, and whipsawing workers across the globe in the mad rush to the sweatshop bottom, is at the heart of corporate policy for the Democratic Party. Conditions for the majority of the population were driven down vastly by corporate downsizing, stagnating real wages, and wholesale cuts to existing social programs. And, as you stated, Furman not only published the defense of Walmart, which is how, by the way, the Clintons made their careers through Sam Walton. They were deeply involved from the beginning with Walton and Walmart were the Clintons. But Furman proposes privatizing the Social Security exactly along the lines the accounts and benefit cuts proposed by the Bush administration. That's the real heart of this Obama candidacy. And indeed, it's interesting that John Sweeney was obligated to make a protest about the role of Furman. But for decades, the labor bureaucracy upheld the so-called Democratic Party labor agenda, which was in fact a Wall Street agenda, subordinating the struggles of working people to the Democratic Party. The Furman appointment was immediately approved by the Washington Post and its associate editor, David Ignatius, who stated, Obama has chosen to help him move from the anti-NAFTA left of the party towards the pro-market center that traces its lineage to the Clinton administration and to the free market and to NAFTA and to the global economy. He writes in his column Thursday, the choice for economic advisors is a sign. Obama's policies involve facing the music, as Furman titled the Brookings Institution paper he co-wrote about repairing the fiscal damage, which means packaging the sellout, packaging a pro-Wall Street deficit-slashing policy, which means scuttling the social programs, scuttling Social Security. Yes, for all the talk of hope and change, brothers and sisters, it's small hope and it's small change.
And Ralph,
it's false hope and it's small change, excuse me.
And Ralph, that was apparent to Time Magazine. Time Magazine, June 9th. What is Obama's economic plan? A short piece by Justin Fox. In it, Fox asks, can Obama make this election a referendum on the U.S. economy? And their answer, not likely, because they note, quote, you can see the internal tensions within the Obama campaign. His economic advisors are moderate, mostly free market-oriented wonks. Again, as we've been saying, his economic advisors are straight out of Wall Street, straight out of pro-NAFTA, cut Social Security, keep the burden on working people, and the rest of it is just platitudes.
it's not merely platitudes. It's a it's soft soaping the working people of this country while selling them out the day after. And that's the role, as we saw with Mayor Wilson Good in Philadelphia, after Frank Rizzo, the proto-fascist police chief, was replaced by Wilson Good. It's under Wilson Good's watch that MOVE was bombed. It's under Wilson Good's watch that the terror bombing of the black section of Philadelphia was undertaken. That's the agenda. That's the role. He breathes a little populist fire, and then he positions himself to implement the agenda of his masters.
And as Time Magazine, this is a mass market publication, as Time Magazine states, that his ideas, they're not what you would call new or transformative either, although they're not necessarily bad ideas, Time writes. Mm-hmm. Obama throws in a few populist, quote, panders. He favors a windfall profits tax on oil companies. He opposes the raising of the Social Security retirement age, although it's going up anyway. And near the end of his speech in Raleigh, which kicked off his planned two-week push on speaking about the economy, there was a hint of his, quote, yes, we can vision, which was to give $4,000 a year in tuition aid to college students, note, who pledged themselves to community or national service after graduation. In other words, they're paying back the $4,000
that kid yourself,
will not get them very far.
That's the transition to the draft, brothers and sisters. National service when you're targeting 100 countries. Here's a piece called Obama's Economic Advisors. Austin Goolsbee, University of Chicago, neoclassicist and free market advocate. David Cutler, the Harvard economist who argues that high health costs are good for the economy. Jeffrey Liebman, the Harvard economist who favors privatizing Social Security, brothers and sisters. These are the key economic advisors to Barack Obama. Now, the critical question here is the role of the Clinton administration in gutting welfare, in gutting social services, in, quote, downsizing government, unquote, and the very individuals who were the architects of that policy, the implementers of that policy, are the key economic people for Barack Obama, quote, Austin Goolsbee, a centrist market economist, The Washington Times, July 16, 2007. His economics are not meant as a joke. His columns are written in the same vein as the neoclassical economist Stephen Levitt's Freakonomics, which is an all-out assault on single-payer recommendations for health care as violating free market principles. You get the picture? By 2030, predicts Robert F. W. Fogel, the Nobel laureate of the University of Chicago Graduate School of Business, 25% of the GDP will be spent on health care, making it a driving force in the economy. So what do they conclude from this? You gotta cut it. High health care costs are not bad for the economy. Pass them on to the consumer, pass them on to the working people. That is the agenda. Jeffrey Liebman, the Harvard economist who co-authored the paper on the privatizing of Social Security as advisor to Bill Clinton, is once again back at his post with Barack Obama. He became, by the way, Reagan's chief economist, and then his cohort, Feldstein, an expert on the economics, Martin Feldstein of Social Security, advocated again the necessity to cut. Feldstein, as this article makes clear, fits nicely into the growing conservative movement which arose after the post-World War II boom came to an end. The Keynesian economics that were gospel at that time gave way to a pre-Keynesian theory of freely operating markets, free from the poison of government control and regulation as the solution. Led by the famous Chicago Boys and Milton Friedman, they carried the day. For years, Reagan railed against Social Security from his General Electric radio pulpit. And now here is the economist who lent professional credence to Reagan's reactionary views on this subject. Where are these people? They're at the center of economic policy for Barack Obama, brothers and sisters. That's what we're getting here. That's the shell game. That's the role of the Democratic Party. That's the role of fake populist liberals who soft soap, as I say, enlist the population by speaking to their aspirations and then selling them down the river.
Ralph, a point in Barack Obama's speech in Flint, Michigan, and also his interview with the Wall Street Journal in the same day that he spoke in Flint. He gave a long interview to the Wall Street Journal, June 17th. The Wall Street Journal wrote, "Barack Obama on economics, we're going through a big shift. His shift was the role of global technology." But in it, there is something that isn't getting enough attention. And that's what he considers the appropriate model. And it's one, quote, that the CIA put into place in Quintilla, where it basically partnered with the private sector to help subsidize investment in socially productive activities, but with an aim towards commercialization as well, end quote. Think about what he's saying. The Central Intelligence Agency partnering with the private sector, subsidizing investments. What they're talking about is industry that is beholden to the Central Intelligence Agency, and he is promoting this. This is a model that he considers innovative and appropriate for the United States. Very important to note the small things that appear in Barack Obama's speeches.
Well, Maya, I think it's important, and we're going to come to this in a separate program, but just to give you an anticipation of it, because Ken Silverstein makes a particular point of it in his piece. When Pennsylvania Congressperson John Murtha called for withdrawal from Iraq last fall, Barack Obama appeared before the Chicago Council on Foreign Relations and rejected Murtha's call, stating that we need to manage exit in a responsible way and leave a stable foundation for the future. He was immediately praised by conservative columnist David Broder because he stated Obama is helping to find a sensible common ground with Bush, pointing the administration and the country towards a realistic course in Iraq. Obama rejects any specific timetable from withdrawal, and even as public opposition to the war grows, and he continues with this shell game, brothers and sisters.
Ralph, a speech of his that garnered a lot of attention needs to be discussed, and you particularly wanted to bring it up in today's show. And that was his Father's Day speech. As the New York Times wrote June 16th, Obama sharply assails absent black fathers, an article by Julie Bossman. And it was in his Father's Day speech in a black Chicago church that Obama talked about his message, quote, "My life revolves around my two little girls." His life revolving around his two little girls, who he scarcely sees as he's out on the campaign trail. And in response to this, Bob Herbert wrote an important column in the New York Times, June 21st, a dubious milestone. Ralph?
Well, Maya, I think it's important to emphasize what the message is here from Barack Obama. It's the same message as conservatives have been giving. It's the same message, actually, that Farrakhan gave in his million-person march, blaming the victim. It's black fathers who have to take responsibility, black families that have to take responsibility. He said, and this is Barack Obama, "Half of all black children live in single-parent households, a number that has doubled since we were children. We know the statistics. Children who grow up without a father, 5 times more likely to live in poverty and commit crime, 9 times more likely to drop out of school, 20 times more likely to end up in prison. They are more likely to have behavioral problems and run away from home and become teenage parents themselves. The foundations of the community become weaker because of it. How many times in the last year has the city lost a child in the hands of another child? How many times have our hearts stopped in the middle of the night with the sound of a gunshot or a siren? How many are sitting in prison when they should be working and looking for a job? How many are willing to lose to poverty or violence or addiction? We need more cops on the street. We need fewer guns in the hands of people who shouldn't have them. We need families to raise children. We need fathers to realize the responsibility does not end at conception. We need..." What is Barack Obama doing here, brothers and sisters? He's blaming the victim. He is here you have a war on black America, a devastated inner city, where there is as much as 60% and 70% unemployment, where the schools virtually don't exist, where the housing is a rat-infested squalor to which people are condemned, where a black man is more likely to end up in prison and indeed is an endangered species. So what do you have Barack Obama the siren of? Blaming the victim. Oh, it's black fathers' absence of responsibility for caring for the young, black fathers who are unemployed, black fathers who are targeted for prison, black fathers who have no schooling and no opportunity at affordable housing. How are you supposed to find employment that can sustain raising a family when there is a social policy which is designed to pauperize the victim sector of the ruling class, the most oppressed sector of the ruling class? What we are looking at here, brothers and sisters, is the role of Barack Obama, blaming the victim, sustaining the system, and selling out the many at the service of those who have purchased him as a hired hand.
You've been listening to an excerpt of Barack Obama, False Hope and Sure Change. I promised you a powerful excerpt, and you had it. This is one, just a small bit, 20 minutes of the 13 programs on this CD. First, I'd like to correct the phone number, so get out your pens. It's 212-209-2950. And next, I'd like to announce a wonderful gift to WBAI in support of Taking AIM. And this is a potential gift. It is a matching fund and a whopper. A $1,000 matching fund from Thomas Durst. Thomas Durst, a KPFA listener out in California, is supporting WBAI because WBAI is the station in the Pacifica Network that broadcasts Taking AIM. $1,000 contribution from Thomas Durst. Thank you so much. He's been a big supporter of Taking AIM since we were first broadcast. Let's listen to what this means. 17 callers on the phone right away for the $60 contribution. If you can give more to WBAI, the sooner we will meet this $1,000 match. This is a very generous contribution, and it depends on you. For the $1,000 that we raise now, we're going to have $2,000 to support WBAI. That means more money to keep WBAI on the air 24/7. And look what you're going to have. Barack Obama, False Hope, and Sure Change. Again, those of you who contributed last time, we're offering this again because it's so important for each and every one of you to not only have it for yourselves, but to share it with friends, family, and colleagues. Ralph, again, the number, 212-209-2950. Get on the phone right away.
Yes, brothers and sisters, and our warm thanks to our brother in struggle, Thomas Durst. And let me remind you, brothers and sisters, that WBAI, Free Speech Radio, this is the legacy of Samori Marksman. This is the tradition of Brother Elambe Brath. This is the radio station of community struggle, the Haitian community, the brothers and sisters in Harlem and in Brooklyn and our prison audience. This is the station that stands tall for the community, for people in struggle, for people in need. That's the theme of Taking AIM. That's the mission of WBAI. That's the real meaning of Free Speech Radio. Let it remain that way, brothers and sisters. Let's keep it that way, in struggle to keep it that way. As a matter of fact, listening to those comments, excerpts, I should say, from our programs in June about Barack Obama, it's extraordinary because, look, brothers and sisters, in today's newspaper, Obama administration spearheads wage cuts for American workers. The White House has given the green light for nationwide wage cutting with its demands on Chrysler and GM workers who have seen wages slashed by 50%, along with the abolition of cost of living raises and cuts in vacation pay. That's the program, that's the agenda, wage cuts imposed on auto workers at Chrysler and General Motors at the insistence of the Obama administration. And as the Washington Post makes clear, this demonstrates the strategy, the class strategy of Obama's administration, that American big business as a whole is carrying out, imposing a massive reduction in the living standards of American workers on a scale unprecedented since the Great Depression. And according to an account published on Sunday by the Washington Post, these wage cuts have included a 10% reduction for contractors working for Microsoft, cuts across the board for hotel workers in New York City, reductions in wages and benefits for state, local government workers in areas across the country, throughout the newspaper industry. The Society for Human Resources Managers has stated that its index of wages for new hires has shown a dramatic decline, and wage rates for temporary workers are in free fall. A survey of young workers on the online advocacy group Kivisory found 19% of adults 29 or younger are out of work. 41% have been impacted by wage cuts and cuts in work hours. 40% of the workers have skipped meals to save money. 62% stated their economic circumstances are drastically poor. And by the way, brothers and sisters, let me just mention this. During his five-year tenure as president of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, Obama's Treasury Secretary, Timothy Geithner, this is the New York Times profile yesterday of Geithner, documenting in detail his close ties to Wall Street's top bankers and financiers. The same Geithner opposed any restrictions on the reckless, profitable, speculative policies that resulted in the financial crisis. He was, in fact, the author of the vast expansion of unregulated derivative markets and subprime lending. Among the Wall Street boosters of both Geithner and Obama's policies were Bush's Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson and Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke. Geithner stood out, and the Times recounts a meeting held last June in which Geithner proposed that Congress be asked to give the president the power guarantee all of the debts of the bankers in crisis. At the time, it was considered too brazen a windfall for the banks to declare publicly. But as the article points out, this is exactly what transpired in the intervening months. It underscores the significance of Obama's appointment of Geithner to head the Treasury Department to oversee the ongoing bailout of the banks, to underwrite the toxic debt of the bankers. It is a signal to the financial aristocracy that the Obama administration concentrates its efforts on protecting the vital interests of the tiny financial elite and Wall Street.
Again, 212-209-2950. Let's keep WBAI on the air, taking aim on the air, Barack Obama, False Hope and Short Change. Each of the 13 programs has been re-edited. They are crisp, really crisp. 13 shows on one CD through the advent of the technology of the MP3 format. $60 contribution for 13 jam-packed programs. Information. This is an incredible biography of Barack Obama. It shows all his connections, deals with not only the domestic policy, but also the foreign policy. And this is very important. Again, we also have call-in shows, which election night call-in show, and the inaugural Eve program. This is important to get your reflections and answers to your questions. Barack Obama, False Hope and Short Change, 212-209-2950. I want to mention again that your calls now go to meet a matching fund of $1,000 from Thomas Durst from California. Thomas Durst supporting WBAI for its broadcast of Taking Aim, just like each and every one of you, a loyal listener to Taking Aim. We've been on the air 8 years now, thanks to WBAI. Thanks to each and every one of you. And as you know, each week we appreciate being with you, brothers and sisters. Please get on the phone, 212-209-2950. 17 contributions, $60 will go to meet this matching fund. Each of your contributions is doubled. Doubled. Think of what that means. Please, 212-209-2950. We put in a lot of effort to bring you the best of premiums that we can present on WBAI.
Well, we want to arm you, brothers and sisters. We want to arm ourselves with the knowledge, the information that will enable us to undertake the struggles that lie ahead of us. You know, the infant mortality rate in the United States, according to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, is now worse than in 28 other countries. In the most recent study, entitled The Measure of America, estimates that the United States is now 34th place in terms of relative income and living standards. The United States has dropped to 34th amongst the nations of the world. Infant mortality is on a rapid rate of increase. The impact of child mortality is vast. There are 28,000 deaths to children under 1 year of age in each year in the United States, according to the CDC report. The fall in workers' real income and the growth of mass unemployment are driving a huge increase in poverty, hunger, and homelessness. U.S. food stamp enrollment rose again, according to figures reported yesterday by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, to a staggering 32.55 million Americans. The number of people receiving food stamps has risen by 1 million since the financial crisis. More than 10% of all working people have to seek food assistance from the federal government. And those figures are official figures, and they're hugely underestimated because they don't. When people keep repeating and repeating, they don't include them. Economist Paul Krugman called attention to this in his Monday column in the New York Times, the falling wage syndrome. He writes, falling wage are a symptom of a sick economy, the symptom of an economy that's growing even sicker. He said that wage cuts accentuate the problem of defaults on mortgages and consumer debt payments. It depresses consumer spending, and it registers the fact now that people are in desperate straits and the crisis is deepening, brothers and sisters, because the policies are ruthless and relentless in protecting and enriching and preserving the hegemony of these banker gangsters. That's what this programming is about, brothers and sisters. Please call in your support. Obtain these premiums. The data is there. We document it. We give you the source for everything because we want to arm you as we arm ourselves intellectually and ideologically and politically so that we're equipped to do the political battle that we have to do because, trust me, brothers and sisters, repression is the handmaiden of pauperization. When the mass of our people are put before this terrible onslaught against their living standards and their survival, we and everybody else in the ruling class are well aware that struggle is the inevitable result of such immiseration, and they prepare for it by repression. Big struggles lie before us. Let's get equipped to carry them through to victory.
Ralph, it is not by chance that we named our show Taking Aim. Taking Aim. In order to be able to take aim, you have to educate yourself. You have to have an understanding of how the ruling class works. Need documentation. This isn't a spectator sport, we say over and over again. In order to organize effectively, you have to be knowledgeable. And that's why we offer premium, jam-packed, documented premiums such as Barack Obama, False Hope, and Sure Change. 212-209-2950. We need to strip away illusions. Prior to this show, I was reading in the arts section about the mammoth celebration of Pete Seeger's 90th birthday that took place at Madison Square Garden last night. Pete Seeger, the legend in terms of being out there with the civil rights movement, being out there with the environmental movement, being out there, a man who himself was blacklisted for so many years because of his outspokenness and his support for social struggles. But what's interesting in this New York Times article about the filled-to-capacity Madison Square Garden event is the celebration of Barack Obama, as if Barack Obama is going to make a difference. False hope, sure change. Please, let us strip the illusions. This is not the movie The Illusionist. This is real life. 212-209-2950. Please get on the phone. Help us meet our $1,000 match from Tom Durst in California. From California and in countries throughout the world, people are listening to Taking Aim. And all of you, get on the phone. This is the time. If you're in Oregon, if you're in Washington, if you're in Kansas, if you're in Illinois, if you're in Virginia, Washington, D.C., 212-209-2950.
Well, I just wanted to mention, brothers and sisters, that in 1982, when martial law was declared in Poland by Jaruzelski, with tacit support from Ronald Reagan, because it was aimed at the militant workers at the Gdansk, the steelworks in Poland, we organized something called American Workers and Artists for Solidarność. We organized the left and the labor movement, the United Auto Workers and the mine workers and the PATCO, public sector, the airline control workers and the stewardesses. And we had Pete Seeger and Gore Vidal and Kurt Vonnegut and Allen Ginsberg
and Paul Robeson,
and Paul Robeson Jr. at the Town Hall in New York. And by the way, that's how Maya and I met in solidarity
and,
with that struggle.
And also, Ralph, this is a good pitch for WBAI, because where was WBAI? WBAI was at Town Hall, and WBAI broadcast the complete Town Hall event. And then
thanks to Brother Bernard, who's always been with us in struggles like this over 29 years, brothers and sisters.
And Ralph, then at KPFK, when the event was in Los Angeles, KPFK broadcast, the WBAI broadcast of the Town Hall, and then KPFK broadcast the event in Los Angeles live to all the people throughout the 90-mile radius of KPFK who couldn't be at the event. They heard it live. This is what Free Speech Radio Pacifica is at its best.
In doing.
And that's as well as in broadcasting taking in.
Yeah,
so get on your phone and dial 212-209-2950.
Because, brothers and sisters, let me be very clear. I think you know what I'm talking about here. It's Free Speech Radio that's at stake here. That's what we need to support. Let's come out and build that free speech momentum for WBAI. Come with your contributions. Support Taking Aim. We will continue this struggle.
Ralph and Minot, you've got some folks to thank here.
Oh, great.
You got Richard Dixon from New York. You have an Alan Weiss from New York, New York. You have the aforementioned Thomas Durst from Ross, California. We have Michael Hoffman from Teaneck, New Jersey. We have a Maryland, and I'm going to butcher your last name. Please forgive me.
Maryland Vote?
Downey?
That's right.
Okay.
Maryland Vote Downey, our dear friend and comrade.
In Brooklyn.
Right, and supporter, longtime supporter of WBAI.
And we have Frank Schober in Chatham, New Jersey. And we have Sharon Thompson in East Stroudsburg. Okay.
Thank you, brothers and sisters, so much.
And have we met our match?
Yes, you have.
Great. Thanks to all of you who have helped us meet our match, and thanks to Tom Durst in California for initiating this. This is a rare event on WBAI that people put forward matches, and we're ready and willing and eager to have another one during this Taking Aim program. 212-209-2950, Barack Obama, False Hope and Short Change. 13 programs on this one CD.
And let me mention, brothers and sisters, that as we speak, Obama and his administration are seeking what are called extraordinary military powers in Pakistan. They are treating their growing intervention as a separate counterinsurgency war and demanding the exact extraordinary military powers secured by the Bush administration in Afghanistan and Iraq. Pentagon officials on Capitol Hill in the last few days issued dire warnings that without massive, immediate, and unconditional military funding for Pakistan, the government will collapse. Bush's own defense secretary and now Obama's defense secretary, Robert Gates, told Congress that if it didn't immediately approve $400 million requested by the Pentagon for Pentagon and Pakistan counterinsurgency capability, the military in Pakistan would run out of funding for operations across Northwest Frontier Province and all of Western Pakistan. Gates revealed that even after the closure of Guantanamo, the U.S. government will imprison hundreds of inmates without charges or trials and set up these prisons in where? Why Afghanistan? They asked Congress for $50 million to build prison facilities in the United States for detainees it claims are dangerous. The funding for military aid for Pakistan is part of an $83.5 billion supplemental bill requested by Obama, and he pledges to continue the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. In fact, General David Petraeus, the chief of the U.S. military central command for Obama as he was for Bush, stated that the Pentagon needed the unique authority for unique circumstances we face in Pakistan. They are adopting the same tactics of the Bush administration. They are demanding immediate passage of unlimited and massive military funding. The Washington Post pointed out on Friday, lawmakers in the House of Senate are voicing concerns about the new Pakistan military funding stream that's going through the Pentagon. Billions of dollars are at stake here with an escalation in military aid and military funding that will continue through 2010, unmonitored, undetected in its particularity, and undisclosed to the American people beyond the general reality. And special operation forces are being mobilized, special forces units are being prepared. It's the same old, this time they're undertaking this strategy of conquest and of fragmenting another country. 160 million people are involved in Pakistan, brothers and sisters, and the ramifications go far beyond.
And Ralph, let's look at the expenditures. We've been talking about infant mortality in the United States. The war budget in the United States for 2009 is $819 billion, almost $1 trillion. And if you put the secret funds that go through other departments, it is probably $1 trillion.
The black funding, Maya, even actually doubles that because it's off-the-books funding for special forces operations, for vast detention centers, for the incarceration of people who are kidnapped off the streets in rendition, because Obama has escalated the rendition that Bush had done with the CIA.
And, Ralph, the supplemental budget that the Obama administration has asked for, aside from the regular Pentagon funding, and by the way, the Pentagon has asked that there be no holds on this, no disclosure, that it's at their discretion, it's over $88 billion. And I looked up what the amount that the federal government spends on education, and it's comparable. So just for their incursions in Afghanistan and now Pakistan and in Iraq, their supplemental budget is about what the federal government spends on education here in the United States. Ralph, there's one thing we must say for anybody who really has illusions about the Obama administration. Look at its Department of Justice. Has its Department of Justice said one word to support Lynn Stewart, who is still awaiting the outcome of her appeal? Has this Department of Justice said anything after the Supreme Court decision in which Mumia Abu-Jamal, the Supreme Court decided that he didn't have a case of...
He didn't have the right to a new trial based on the fact that blacks were excluded from the jury. He didn't have a right to a new trial based upon the suborning of perjury. He didn't have a right to a new trial based upon the new evidence of witnesses that established decisively that he was framed for this charge.
Has this Obama administration said anything about Leonard Peltier, who is suffering in prison? What has this administration said? Leon Panetta, the head of the CIA, has told the CIA staff that they will not be held responsible for their torture.
Maya, torture is now being sanctioned at every level by the Obama administration. It's not just a question of not placing on trial or holding legally liable Bush or Cheney or Ashcroft or Condoleezza Rice. The actual torture practices are being institutionalized and sustained and maintained and sanctioned. We were going to do a special series on this. One last point, brothers and sisters, and then I want to shut up and get you to call, please. World Bank President Robert Zelnick has issued a warning. Quote, there is a deepening global and economic crisis that threatens to unleash, quote, a human and developmental calamity across the globe. Robert Zoellick issued this warning in the context of a meeting of the World Bank. Developing countries are seeing vast consequences, the crisis driving over 50 million people into extreme poverty, 5.3 to 8.5%, 90 million more people trapped in poverty, the number of chronically hungry people climbing to over 1 billion this year. Stark warnings. These are the direct consequences of these policies. Brothers and sisters, this is not a set of policies on behalf of bankers and gangsters in Wall Street that lack human consequences. The human consequences are measured in the deaths of millions of people and the immiseration of billions.
We can do something about it. And right now, what the action to take is to dial 212-209-2950. Keep the voice of WBAI broadcasting. Keep the voices of Maya Schoen and Ralph Schoenman reaching each and every one of you and reaching, thanks to the Internet, around the world. 212-209-2950. Once again, I want to thank Tom Durst in California for supporting Taking Aim and WBAI with his matching fund. I want to thank each and every one of you who contributed, that allowed us to make our match and go beyond it. Please continue with your calls for Barack Obama, False Hope, and Short Change. We are going to be with you each week of this WBAI fund drive, knowing that each and every one of us are pulling together to keep WBAI broadcasting 24/7. The station means a lot to each and every one of us. Let's keep it vital. 212-209-2950.
And to maintain WBAI, brothers and sisters, as a free speech radio station, that's our task. That's our task when the Global Financial Stability Report of the International Monetary Fund, published on Tuesday, predicted that total credit write-downs worldwide will exceed $4 trillion and, quote, the world banking system is close to insolvency, unquote. Do we have a struggle ahead of us, brothers and sisters? We sure as hell do. Support Free Speech Radio. Support Taking Aim.
Sean, or do we have more time? Because we'll continue.
No, you need to wrap up.
Okay, 212-209-2950. Please, Barack Obama, False Hope, and Short Change. Let me just briefly tell you some of the programs in it. Barack Obama, the Democratic Party and the Corporate State, False Hope, and Short Change. Entrapping Barack Obama, the underlying politics of the NAFTA disclosure, not a dime's worth of difference, and something that is not talked about very much, and that's Barack Obama and the ethanol scam, serving the captains of capital, where we discuss a specific instance of how Barack Obama and particular corporations like Archer Daniels Midland are...
His career was, in fact, initiated and fostered by Arthur Daniel Midland's and the great food conglomerates that have pauperized the millions of billions of people around the world. This is a very particular program that documents how this came to be.
And President Obama preserving a decaying capitalism. Please, Barack Obama, False Hope, and Short Change, your contribution to WBAI, $60, 212-209-2950. This has been Ralph
yes, my dear. Maya Schoen and Ralph Schoenman, brothers and sisters. La luta continua. Hasta la victoria siempre.
We'll be with you next week. Please visit our website, www.takingaimradio.com, where thanks to our webmaster, Mark Bilt, you can find each of our shows over the past 8 years.
WBAI New York, 99.5 on your FM dial, streaming at www.wbai.org. In another minute, it will be time for the WBAI Evening News. In the meantime, I have been asked to announce that our dinner was donated from Madiba.